I mean, it's a huge...
huge undertaking.
Yeah, huge undertaking. And, I mean, there's I guess, two parts. There's a strategy, which came out a couple of years ago, which was the actual Te Mana o Te Taiao, which is the plan, the goals, the objectives. How are we going to make better inroads into fixing biodiversity, improving, condition and trend of species and so forth? And then there's a accompanying, how are we actually going to pull it off, the implementation with this most recent report. So they're really... two pieces. The first one is about what are we going to do and why, and the second one is how we're going
to
do it.
Yes, because I would like to address the why. If you're able to sort of give us a kind of background on why the situation is so urgent.
Start with way back at the beginning. There's a lot of unique and special species in New Zealand and places, so things that you can't find anywhere else in the world. And so, you know, there's a reason we call a lot of species treasures. They really are what we call endemic, so they're only found in New Zealand. And most measures are for a number of species, they're in decline. And so there's obvious the ones people recognize, birds being extinct and so on, but even widespread species are on decline. And that's despite, you know, decades of conservation efforts and predator control and these sorts of activities. And so something different had to happen. And so just doing more of the same sort of management wasn't going to reverse the decline. And I guess my role is partly in one of the national science challenges. It's around biological heritage. And there's two pieces to that. There's the biodiversity, the things we want to have, we want to see improve and flourish, and then the biosecurity. So it's the pests, weeds, diseases that we don't want and create threats and problems, not just to biodiversity, but people's livelihoods as well. So it's a combination of getting the things we want and also minimizing the damage from the things that we don't want.
So what differentiates this plan from what's been attempted in the past?
Just the scale of how it was developed is a huge step up from previous efforts. So it really was a lot of different people, cross-government departments and so forth.
Yes, because it does seem to require quite a bit of collaboration, for instance, between sort of regional councils, DOC, the Ministry of Primary Industries.
That's right. So a couple of big things. So this idea of collective action, so that no one agency, like we just don't say, hey, Doc, you're in charge of this. It's actually got to be across government agencies. So that's a huge change from previous ones, where it really is, how do we look across all the different people and their activities and put it together? So coordinate it. And ideally, if it's coordinated, that means you have a better outcome than what individuals or individual organizations can do. So that's partly why it takes such a huge effort, is just getting people around the table to say, well, what are you doing? What's your contribution? How do we work together better on this? So that's a huge change in just how it's approached. Empowering people, this is something that comes up in Predator Free and the Biodiversity Plan. Like, it's always been in there that people are really passionate about conservation and biodiversity. But increasingly, it's how do you motivate people, generally governments that change at shorter time scales than a lot of the biodiversity crisis is happening on. So how do you sustain people's interest, energy, support of these activities? And that's a huge sort of uptick in effort on that.
So Forest and Bird have come out and said sort of this plan is off to a really good start and has really good foundations, but there are some concerns.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. It's always sort of, it is a big thing. This is a big change and step, but it is still a first step. And so I can see that, is it ambitious enough given declines in some places? Probably not. There's not enough detail on some species. So what I'd say is, you know, the plan's got over 200 actions or something in it. I mean, just keeping track of all the different things going on is, I guess, that first step. And then really, to me, that would be the next thing is, are those all the right actions? Are they actually being supported well enough? Are they urgent enough? And that's not really clear in the implementation plan, but you could see, yeah, that's coming next.
There seems to be sort of an assessment stage in 2025 to make sure that everything's going on track. And then, well, I also wanted to ask you what you think about the timeline. So to have these goals achieved by 2050. Do you think that's enough time?
That's a great question. So I'm involved with some of the predator-free collaborative groups as well, which, you know, we're on the same timeline for that. And hey, it's ambitious. I mean, in all honesty, it's sort of far enough ahead that you could say, yep, there's lots of changes, activities, new technologies and so on that could come to bear. And you'd hope you can achieve things by then. But the realistic assessment is there'll be activity beyond the 2050. But it is good to have some stake in the ground or some goals to say, yep, that's what we're going to aim for. And even if we don't quite get there, it's still worth aiming for. So I would just see them as aspirational goals, but absolutely well-intentioned and worth having those goals.
Now, I also wanted to ask you about funding. Are you confident that the funding secured at the moment is going to be enough? Because that was another thing that was flagged by Forrest and Bird, was that we need to sort of increase funding, find new funding strategies. They suggested greater use of polluter pay principles, so like levying greenhouse gas polluters for the cost of adapting to climate change. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, that's a perennial issue, is are things resourced well enough? And often they're not, or things can be a bigger job than you expect. And that's partly why, you know, I mentioned things like new technologies or approaches. There's always a, we can't quite get there now, but maybe if things are cheaper or more effective in the future, that you know, some of those issues are there. But there's always an issue of, is there sufficient resources to meet the goals? And often not. I can give you specific examples. Like, I don't know about the policy and legislation background. I'm really an ecologist who does applied ecology. And so, say we've done lots of work on wilding conifers, and that's been a huge effort. But we sort of know, it's actually going to be quite a long term, and how you actually fund the operations longer term is sort of an ongoing issue. And that's just one example. There's lots.
Just another thing that was flagged by Forrest and Bird that I wanted to bring up was a lack of primary sector transformation. So there's not enough in the report that's kind of identifying and addressing the environmental impacts of what is actually the country's most damaging economic activities.
Ooh, no, this is a fraught one. I mean, heaps of improvements. So maybe the taking a step back from primary industry and so on, it's just land use and its change is one of the big drivers of biosecurity and biodiversity problems, but also ways that we can improve things. So I guess I wouldn't be negative. I would say, yep, there's certainly has been problems in the past. There's legs and legacies of land use. How do we do things from here? And so some of the things that are in the implementation is saying, hey, how do we connect up with billion trees or climate change and carbon? Because a lot of this can be around, you know, native woody regeneration, and some of that is on marginal lands. There's improvements around waterways. So I guess you'd have to say primary industry is absolutely here to stay. It's how do we prove that for biodiversity benefits as well? And those sorts of things are in implementation, but it's still lots of good examples, but lots more to do.
I think that's all covered there on my end. Did you have anything else you want to flag?
To me, the biggest thing is just how long-term this stuff is. So if we think, yep, this is a plan, there's been lots of plans, is it going to work? We're not sure, but we'll give it a try. So it's almost like they mentioned this thing about being adaptable, or as you go, you learn. And that's a really hard one, because what you're doing is you're setting up things for 20, 30 years out, and you're not quite sure if they're going to work. So if the things you're doing this year, next year, 5 years are actually exactly what's needed. So you sort of learn as you go. And to me, that's one of the hardest things, because that's a bit uncertain. It's not like a contract. We say, hey, we've got the money, we do this effort, we're going to fix it. There's always going to be some uncertainty. And to me, that's one of the hardest things. How do you keep people really positive and want to do it with that uncertainty?